If you're a devoted reader of columns from New York Times op-ed columnist Nicholas Kristof, you know that for the past year he's dedicated most of them to the Arab Spring and its aftermath, often traveling to regions to report on these revolutions firsthand. But in the midst of these bitter struggles across the Middle East, Kristof started to wonder about Iran. How did the Iranian regime manage to stay in power with very little internal dissent throughout the dramatic upheavals and sometimes violent uprisings of the Arab Spring? So Kristof decided to find out, and he took his kids on a road trip across Iran looking for some answers. Nicholas joins us now to talk about that trip and the people he met. Welcome back.
Hi, good morning, Celeste.
You know, I got to ask you, how safe did you feel, Nick? Because, you know, there's been some pretty high-profile arrests in Iran where they've suspected Westerners of being spies.
Well, I certainly didn't want to go hiking along the Iraq-Iran border, especially with the kids. But, you know, on balance, it seems to me that I felt that as an American journalist there with the government's permission, that it was certainly less risky than a lot of other places journalists are reporting these days. And I didn't think the kids would be at risk, which was, you know, certainly a big concern. The people I worry about most, of course, are those Iranians you interview, because they are 1,000 times more vulnerable. And you really worry about, you know, I was with a video journalist, and we were videoing people saying some really harsh things about the government. And we were very concerned that that video not be confiscated and get those people in trouble.
I don't blame you. And you got some incredible comments from people. Let's take a listen to some of the Iranian opinions that you collected.
The people of Iran like American people, but they don't like the policy of your government.
I wish maybe I had a mother and father from America, from Europe. But this is not my choice, you know? I can't do anything about this. I'm Iranian. I cannot change this.
You know, Nick, listening back to some of these interviews that you did, I'm reminded of how little Americans really know about the Iranian people as opposed to the government.
Yeah, and that was really what I was trying to do on this trip, was to if you will, sort of try to take the pulse of the public. And so I spent very little time in Tehran. And with my kids, we did a 1,700-mile road trip. And we were, the government let us do that. We were not tailed as far as we could tell. We just stopped periodically and started some conversations, and I would try to veer them into politics. And it was a reminder of how non-monolithic Iran is. There are certainly still a lot of people who support the regime, and there are an awful lot of people who are very hostile to it.
How informed are they? I mean, we think of the Iranian state TV kind of controlling all the information that they get. Where do they get their headlines from?
The single factor that probably explains the most whether the people that I talked to were pro-regime or anti-regime was their access to satellite television. In general, people in rural areas who only had access to state media tended to be pretty supportive of the regime. And people who had access to satellite TV, which basically meant that they had illegally purchased and set up a little satellite dish, they tended to be to think that the state media was much more propaganda-based, to be much more doubtful about everything the regime was doing. And even on issues like the nuclear negotiations, they still often thought that Iran had the right to have nuclear reactors, but they questioned whether this was really the best use of billions of dollars.
And it sounds to me, and obviously I wasn't with you on this incredibly long 1,700 miles, you say, trip, but it sounds like there's a real generation gap. Let's take a listen to one young person here, the young music store owner that you spoke with.
The lack of political freedom is suffocating me. Our problem is this. Today's Iran is ruled by personal fiat. Without regard to the guidelines of religion, without regard to the interests of the people, and if one day a path opens up, we will make our beliefs a reality.
So what's the difference between the generations there?
It's huge, and young people are profoundly discontent. A lot of them, I mean, you know, it's not just that they want democracy. They also want to have fun, and to them, it was fascinating to me to compare my trips through the Arab world and to see how some secular dictatorial regimes had created a backlash in which people embraced Islam. Well, in Iran, it's something of the opposite, that a oppressive religious regime created a backlash in which people embraced secularism. And that's obviously not true for everybody, but the discontent among young people is enormous, and I think it's compounded because those young people tend to be much better educated than their parents. One thing that Iran has really actually done a pretty good job of is raising education standards, but that, I think, has undermined support for the regime. And these young people also have much more access to the internet, and especially to satellite television, and just to all kinds of other things. I mean, we walked into one home, and you know what the kids were playing? They were playing Grand Theft Auto. So
I'm not sure I approve of that.
Yeah, I didn't know whether to speak up. but it, you know, it's a very different world that these young Iranians, and about half the population is under 25, are growing up in.
And, I mean, obviously they have a lot of access to social media. That's something we saw during the Green Revolution, the protests in 2009 and in 2010. And we all thought that would become a movement, and yet it hasn't. Nick, why?
I think that we mistakenly think sometimes that uprisings are based on how discontent people are. That's one factor. But just as important is the willingness of the government to shoot people. And in Iran, the government is willing to shoot people.
Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times, who took a 1,700-mile summer road trip across Iran with his children. And I want to dig a little deeper, Nicholas, into the discontent you say you heard from some people. I mean, it's understandable that there are still a large number of people who support the government. But I wanted to kind of ask you about the way in which the country's been affected by the Arab Spring. Take a listen to this comment you got from a guy at the Caspian Sea beach.
A year and a half ago in Egypt, nobody thought Egypt would change. Nobody thought Yemen would change.
You know,
nobody thought Syria would change.
You want to say that the Iran people will change?
Yeah.
We hope so.
We hope so.
He's saying he hopes Iran would change. Did any of them have any concrete ideas on how that change might happen?
There are a lot of different theories. You know, I mean, they kind of boil down to an uprising from down below at some point when they're, for whatever reason, the government would not shoot people. Now, there is evolution of the top, maybe after the supreme leader dies, or then there would be a move. Iran is not totally unresponsive to public opinion. I mean, for example, on female hijab, what it's appropriate for women to wear, there's clearly been a relaxation, not nearly far enough. It's still oppressive, but women are no longer flogged for having bad hijab. And so one can imagine a certain amount of relaxation in some contexts to give people, and politicians are competing in a sense for public opinion within an incredibly narrow range. So, you know, I've covered a lot of regimes that are oppressive and that end up falling, and Iran feels very much like them. But they've changed in a lot of different ways.
Well, since you're talking about women and their relationship with the government, let's take a listen with an exchange you had with a woman also at the Caspian Sea.
It must be kind of humiliating for a adult woman to be called over by police and say, cover your arms.
Where in the world doesn't one get annoyed by this? Yes, we're sick and tired of it.
Explain to me what exactly is happening with the women of Iran.
Well, actually, that particular woman, what happened was I was interviewing her on the beach, and she was criticizing the government, and a policeman rushed over, and I thought, oh, no, I've got this woman in trouble for criticizing the regime. But actually, the problem was that she had rolled up her sleeves to about her elbow. So she was showing her forearms, and the policeman was just aghast at this. And that was actually, in fact, the only time I can think of on the trip that a policeman, you know, blocked us from doing an interview. But what was also fascinating was that she was yelling back. You know, he yelled at her, she yelled back at him. And these women they're better educated than men now. They're not particularly intimidated. The police do round up and take to police stations these women who have bad hijab, and they go, but they give the policeman an earful.
And in the end, may you end up getting the government an earful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, you just really get the sense that these young people are so fed up with the government that they're gaining ground. They're the force that represents the future. And I think one way or another, Iran down the road is going to be very different from the way it is right now.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. Nicholas Kristof, columnist for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Celeste.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.